Zeta's my last name. Two initials.
EJ Zeta.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, I was a city girl, and my mama was raised on a farm in Wisconsin, and my dad's folks were city folks in Madison, and I was born in Madison, Wisconsin. And we would go up to my mama's folks' farm up in Greenville, which is by Appleton. And I loved the animals. And I was always bringing home animals in the city. I'd bring home birds and bunnies and things that I should have just left alone. And Mom would tell me I should just leave them alone, but she would help me take care of them when I brought them home. And so Mom worked real hard to get off the farm.
Come on, get your toy. Get that toy. Whose toy is that? Good toy. Good play.
She grew up on a dairy farm and worked hard as a kid on the farm. And she put herself through nursing school. And she was glad to move to the city. And she was happy to raise her kids up in the city. She wanted a better life for us. And now, 3 out of 4 of her kids have moved back to farm land. And I like living on a farm. Evergreen, I didn't even know about, but I was looking for a permanent job teaching physics. I had a temporary job teaching physics in the Midwest, and one of my colleagues said, you should apply to Evergreen. That is the perfect place for you. And so I looked at it and I said, you're right. That's the perfect place for me. And I guess Evergreen agreed. Went to high school for a while in the Midwest, but my dad was with the service, and so we did a standard 3-year tour in Germany, and that was fabulous. I finished high school at Stuttgart American High School. Stuttgart was cool. The city was kind of like Detroit. Stuttgart makes a lot of cars, BMWs and Porsches, and so there's factories around Stuttgart. The city is pretty nice. It was bombed out during the war, but they rebuilt it, and there's a few old things left in the city. It's surrounded by hills. But we didn't live in the city, and we didn't live on base. We lived in a little farming town, like an hour outside of town. So it was great. We just got to know our German neighbors and learned to speak German. And after I finished high school, the family was still there for a year. So I went to the German university and took physics and math and chemistry classes and tended bar. And dance disco. It was those times. I danced disco. I've always loved to dance. If I could, because, you know, I had a farm accident a couple years ago, so. Yeah, I'm not dancing as much as I used to, but I will dance again. You know, I don't think I have. I thought when we left Germany that I wouldn't be able to settle down because we used to travel, as kids used to travel all over and go everywhere for cheap. That's when you could still do Europe on $5 or $10 a day. And we'd just go all over the place. And I thought I had the Wanderlust and I would never be able to settle down. But when we got to America, I found out America was so big, there was plenty to see here. So I hitchhiked and got a motorcycle and traveled all over America. I hitchhiked for a couple of years, and then I finally got a motorcycle because hitching was a little dicey,
right.
And motorcycling gave me more freedom. Okay. My best experiences in Germany. We would ski in the Alps, and we would stay in these farmhouses. We didn't go to the big resorts. We would go to little towns and stay in these farmhouses. And there was a girl at one of the towns, one of the farmhouses we stayed in, who had never been skiing on a local mountain. Her family would host tourists like us that would come ski, but she'd never been up there. They couldn't afford to. So we took her up there one time, and she and I skied all day together. Her name was Gabby, and she was so happy up there on the mountain that she yodeled. It was beautiful. It was magical. And up there on the mountain, you're so high up that you can see the sky curve. You can see the earth curve. Well, Italy was fabulous because of all the art, but Italy's where I had my most scary experience. We got to, Pisa? I think it was Pisa. We got there too late. And where we were going to stay, we couldn't stay. And so we were trying to find a place to stay. And we were at a cafe or something. And the proprietor said, oh, well, talk to these guys. They can speak English and they'll help you find a place to stay. And there were these two young law students, really nice guys. And they spoke English. And we didn't speak Italian. I spoke Spanish, but not very good Italian. And they were really helpful. They found us a place to stay, and they said, well, now you need to eat. And we said, no, really, it's late. We're just going to turn in. They said, no, we insist. And so we went out to eat. And then they said, well, now we need to go out for dessert and coffee. And we're like, no, it's really late. We really have to go to bed. And they're like, no, we insist. And it kept going on like that all night long. Well, we have to go to the beach. That couldn't have been Pisa. I don't know where it was. We had to go to the beach. And there was no saying no to these guys. And they got pushier and pushier. And when they got to the beach, it became clear what they wanted. And so my girlfriend and I linked arms and would not be separated. And so they got mean and they got rough and we stayed together. And we finally got back in the car and said, we're going home. And what do? We sat in the back seat and they were really mad. They were getting meaner, and I had a little Swiss Army knife. And this is not what you're supposed to do. The self-defense classes say you should never do this, but I took it out, and I was in the back seat in the passenger side. And I took the passenger guy by the hair. And I held the knife to his throat. And I said, you're taking us home. And they did. And they were mad, but they did it. And my girlfriend was scared, really scared. And she sang hymns in the back seat the whole way into town. And I didn't know if they were going to take us home or not, but they did. Yeah, we got home safe, and we got into town, and we jumped out of the car, and we got to our place. You know, I think that my earlier experiences actually shaped my character that way, because I'd had some scary experiences when I was younger, and I learned that standing up for myself pays off. And so I kind of got in the habit of doing that. My girlfriend thought it was a huge mistake. She thought I was going to get us killed. And I might have, because at the self-defense workshops, they say never use a weapon because they could just as well turn it around against you. And they probably know more about weapons than you do. It's probably not that way now. I don't know. But this was in the, this must have been about 79. Most of my experiences hitchhiking in Europe were really good. People were really friendly. It was totally safe. And when I got to America, I thought it would be the same way. And so I just kept hitchhiking in America. It was not as safe in America. And I was still just, you know, unafraid, really. After doing all that in Europe, I felt invincible. And I put myself in risky situations and just got really lucky, I guess. I recognize that they were risky situations and that it wasn't as safe to hitch in America as it is or was in Europe. And that's why I got the motorcycle. Plus, it's so fun to ride just with the wind in your face and you can smell the trees. It was a Kawasaki 450. It was not big enough to actually take on the highway, but I did. My mom was a nurse, and she forbade any of us to ever get a motorcycle because she had seen motorcycle accidents, and we had seen motorcycle accidents when we were kids. When I was in dance class, when I was a little girl, mm-hmm. One day a guy came in to the dance studio who'd had a bad motorcycle accident. He came limping and all bloody, and they called an ambulance for him. And in front of our elementary school one day, there were two motorcycles riding, and one of them, I don't know how this happened, if he was avoiding a car or what, but one of them rode into the other motorcycle. They both crashed, and one of them got his head smashed. And us kids, of course, were fascinated by the gore on the street. So us kids had seen motorcycle accidents before. We knew it was bad, and Mom insisted we could never have a motorcycle, but I was the first one to get it, and then all my little brothers, of course, went and got motorcycles after that. Well, I'm a scientist. Right. I'm a woman scientist. I'm a physicist. And let's see, I'm a farmer. And that was my wife that came in. We don't say wife, we say girlfriend. Lesbian. She's a vet. Okay. She served 23 years in the Army, mostly reserves. She had filed for retirement after 20, but then Bush started that war, Bush the second, and they put a stop loss on her because she's medical. And so they called her up the week after we marched in an anti-war march downtown. And when she was on active duty, I was marching downtown with a sign saying, "Support our troops, bring them home," with her picture on it. And the Olympia police attacked a peaceful demonstrator, two of them. And then we tried to stand up for them, and the cops maced us all and filed police brutality against this one particular guy, and he went on to kill an unarmed civilian a few years after that. So with all this stuff that's going on now, you know, and I, a group of us got together and tried to mediate with the police. They did an investigation that went nowhere, and so I saw how that can go wrong. Even though I thought the Olympia police chief was a good guy at the time, nothing came out of that. So I've seen how, you know, some things need to change in the system. was a gray white man. It started out with the cops tried to stop. Both of the people that they brutalized were white, and they were older, with gray hair. I can't speculate on what was motivating the cops. They didn't approve of the situation, and they wanted more control over the situation, and they overreacted. It was quite a scene. So I know it can happen to anyone. It was a sweet, pudgy little white-haired grandma was the first one they knocked down, and then a white-haired, skinny white man tried to catch her as she was falling, and a cop came and just barreled him over from the side. He didn't even see him coming. Knocked him on the ground, started beating him up. The crowd came around and said, "Let him go, let him go," so they just maced us all. Well, the cops who were involved had a propensity for that sort of thing, as we saw, you know, a few years later when they killed an unarmed man of color. And nothing ever came of that. His family didn't get justice. And that was here in Olympia. Today was the day that, is it her name Mosley in Baltimore, announced that they're prosecuting those officers that were responsible, she says were responsible for Freddie Gray's death. So that's a step in the right direction. One of the good changes I've noticed is the students. When I first came there about 20 years ago, it was, I think they called it an entitlement culture in the K through 12 system, social promotion, where there was a big emphasis on making students feel good about themselves and less emphasis on accountability. And that's not so as much anymore. And the students that come to our classes now, they're not better prepared academically, but they take more responsibility for their learning, and that is a joy. They're great to work with. Like the students in my class last year, I had to make some last-minute changes to the way I was teaching it because I had this farm accident and I was recovering from surgery. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do what I usually do, so I said, okay, we're all going to work on the same research project. We're going to figure out how much solar power we can produce at Evergreen. And some of the students said, well, I really wanted to do this, that, or the other, but okay, I'll join in on this because we're all going to be one team. And everybody did different parts of that project, and they did fabulous work. In one quarter, they figured out that we could get about half the electricity we still need from solar panels, and we could heat the pool. And different teams figured out different aspects of it, and now our research team is going to write a grant proposal this summer and try and make it happen. And these are students who had... A lot of them hadn't had a science class before. They only had algebra. They didn't know calculus or differential equations. And they did fabulous work because they were willing to work, willing to learn, and they cared about it. This is an example of what Evergreen students can do.